Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, April 19th, 2024. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the two words that say start here in the upper left-hand corner, it'll take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using for over 19 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And if you choose to do that before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and it contains a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do all of that soon and often, primarily because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives the more they actively apply these tools in their lives. And secondarily, because it tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, we would appreciate you doing so by giving us a call at 563-999-3581. Once you call that number, if you press 1 on your phone, it'll put the little icon of a hand by your phone number. I'll then turn on the microphone, announce you by your area code, and we can have a conversation. And if you'd prefer to give us a feedback or ask a comment or give us an answer or a question or whatever and don't want to call in live, you can do so by sending us an email. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. And or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And if we get a comment or a question from you or a testimonial or some kind of a refutation, we will address it on the Internet show and then, as time allows, send you a notification and through the email so that you can listen back to the archives for your feedback or input. And we greatly appreciate whenever anybody does that because it just makes it so much easier for us to live into our intention with this work. The intention we have with this work is to be of service, and that is much, much easier to do when people let us know how these things are landing for them, what's working, what's not working so well, and how we might most effectively spend the next couple of hours, since we're doing this 2 hours, 5 days a week. Plenty of opportunity for do-overs and rehashing and taking it in a whole new direction. So every time anybody calls and comments or brings up a question, it benefits everybody, and we are grateful whenever anyone chooses to do that. We are we're sitting here on a little blue rock spinning through space, using whatever we've been taught by our parents and families and culture and language to try and make sense of our lives, to try and give our lives a sense of importance. And if you have any difficulty setting up your life in a way that gives it a sense of meaning or feels important enough to you, you might want to look at Dr. Michael Rice's worksheet, Purpose, Personal Power, and Commitment. The Commitment Worksheet. No, that is the Secondary Purpose Worksheet. So the title of the talk that worksheet comes from is Purpose, Personal Power, and Commitment. And the worksheet is for developing your secondary purpose, which will be unique to you and is kind of the follow-up to or the companion to your primary purpose. And your primary purpose will be the same as every other person's, according to Dr. Michael Rice, the way he talks about this. Our primary purpose is to develop and then strengthen a viable, conscious, spiritual body. That's his terminology for it. And so everybody has the same primary purpose. Your secondary purpose will be based on what you construct. And the worksheet he has for that asks you to make a list of 10 things you're naturally good at doing. And then make a list of 10 things that you absolutely love to do without any regard for whether or not they are financially viable or fit into anybody else's economic system. And then create a statement that describes briefly how the world will look through your eyes, your particular view of the world, when it's perfect. And once you've created those three lists, those three items, a list of 10 things you're naturally good at doing, a list of 10 things you absolutely love to do, even if you can't see how they might be beneficial to yourself or anybody else, and this description of how the world will look through your eyes when it's perfect, then he asks you to formulate a statement that says, I now choose to use one, two, or three things from the first list of things I'm naturally good at, as I do one, two, or three things that I just love to do, as a way of helping the world become, and then you put in whatever your summary statement of how the world's going to look through your eyes when it's perfect. And that's when, if you start working with that, you have developed a secondary purpose for yourself. And so he says, now as an exercise, you can get up each morning, and if you're planning to do anything in your day that's going to take a considerable amount of time, intelligence, money, or energy, that's his acronym for all of the good stuff in your life. Your time, your intelligence, your money, and your energy. The acronym is TIME. Before you commit to doing something that's going to take a sizable amount of time, intelligence, money, or energy, you hold it up to your primary purpose and your secondary purpose, and you make sure it's at least aligned with it. Maybe the thing you plan to do today is take a day off and go relax and get some rest and relaxation. And it's not going to derail you from creating and strengthening a viable conscious spiritual body, and it's not going to make it harder for you to accomplish your secondary purpose, whatever you've decided it is. It's just not going to actively further your secondary purpose. But certainly taking a day for rest and relaxation is a good thing to do for your primary purpose, for you to develop and strengthen your viable conscious spiritual body, to slow down, to get in touch with the truth of your nature, to get rested. However, if you look at something that you're planning on doing and you realize it's going to take a tremendous amount of time and money and energy, and it really is not in alignment with either creating and strengthening a viable conscious spiritual body, acting from a true nature as love, being respectful to yourself and others, or it's really going to take time away from your ability to pursue your secondary purpose, whether it's going to take money away from it or it's going to put you in a state of mind where it's going to be harder for you to be in alignment with that secondary purpose, then as Michael talks about it in that lecture, then you just don't do it. And in that way, as you keep comparing what you plan to do with your primary and secondary purpose, you keep aligning your energies. And when your energies are aligned and focused, you're just so much more productive. You move so much more quickly in the direction of your stated desires. So I'm bringing this up because several people recently have talked about it. We were listening to the Vintage Guy Finley talk last night that talked about a sense of purpose, etc. And the idea is everybody's sense of purpose can be very, very different because we're just making it up. Right? There is no ultimate answer here. It's what you make of your life. That's what Way of Mastery is trying to get us to pay attention to, that we really are creating our experience of life each new present moment. And if we wake up and recognize that and we don't like what we're creating, then we can change the process and change the results. But if we think it's being done to us, if we think we can't influence it in any way, then that becomes our actuality. That becomes how we create an experience for ourselves. So, 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation and we can talk a little bit more about what you're making your life mean. Literally, we're spinning through space on a little blue ball with a tiny little covering of atmosphere that keeps us, you might say, healthy and safe, keeps us from negative effects of the intensity of the energy of the sun, etc. And we're one of, I don't know, how many billions of people are on the planet right now. So you get to make up what you want to believe is important in your life. You get to choose and make up what you believe is your purpose in life. And maybe nobody's ever told you that before. And maybe, you know, that's just a wonderful thing to use, tune into and create a whole new creative experience for yourself. Or maybe you've been told this is your purpose from somebody on the outside and they've crafted it for you and you've been marching along lockstep thinking that was your true purpose or that was what you had to do. And now we're introducing the question. Is that the truth? Do I actually have to do that? Is it possible for me to create a sense of purpose and meaning for myself that's unique to me, that might be the same as a bunch of other people's, but it might be different than anybody I've ever encountered before? Well, that's the offering here. That's the question we're proffering. We're suggesting you might want to look at that and look at your life from the perspective of you have choice. And you may not be able to choose how tall you are. You may not be able to choose at this conscious logical level what's going on in the world around you. And yet you do have choice of how you choose to interpret and respond to every event in your life. And this includes your sense of purpose. I mean, I was just... It's been striking to me in the past 2 or 3 weeks how many different people I've had conversations with about feeling like they don't have a purpose in their life. And that doesn't have to remain the case. You can create a purpose. I remember talking about this, and there were 3 different ways to create a sense of purpose or this guidepost for yourself. One of them was the Dr. Michael Rice worksheet that I just mentioned. Another one was the passion test, and that's, you know, something you can take free online, and it's just passiontest.com. And the other one was something from a gentleman named Greg Moores, M-O-O-E-R-S. And this is a gentleman who was searching for the purpose in his life. And he searched and searched and tried several different careers and even became a, I think he said, a Buddhist monk. And I think he did that for like 10 years. It wasn't like he just did it for a week or two. And then he still wasn't happy. And he was really bummed out at the fact that he didn't feel happy, even though he'd done all of this meditating and so then he realized that the big pain in his life was that he felt like he didn't have a purpose. So he tapped into the biggest pain in his life, this feeling that he didn't have purpose, and he just got this intuitive hit that what he needed to do was help other people who don't feel they have a purpose cope with that or find a purpose, and then his suffering would have meaning. So I heard him once get interviewed because he'd written a book about it, or I don't know if he'd written a book, but he'd written articles about it, and he was putting this out there as he called it heart virtue. I have no idea how he came up with that set of words for this, but he would interview people and ask them to talk to him about the worst things that happened to them in their life. And as he would talk to them about that, he would listen for the intense emotional energy at its peak. And when he would hear them say something that had a charge to it, big charge to it, he would ask a little bit more. And what he was looking for was, as they list the worst of the worst things that have happened to them in their lives, he was listening for the one that the individual would finally come up and say with great gusto and venom and vigor, no one should have to go through this. And he'd say, okay, that's the one. That's what we're going to help you use to create a meaning for your life, your most intense suffering, the thing that you think no one should have to go through. And then he would say, now, name a number. Name a nice, big, fat number, but a solid, specific number. Not say, I want to help a lot of people with this. And so people would say, well, 500 or 5,000. He would coach them to see if they wanted to go bigger, but a specific number. And then he would have them, just like Michael Rice does in his work, he'd have them formulate a statement. And the statement was, I now choose to use a significant amount of my time, intelligence, money, and energy to make sure that 500,000 people don't have to have this happen to them, or 500,000 people have help recovering from this. And that's how I craft my life's purpose. I'm going to turn my suffering, my pain, into purpose for others, and that will be, therefore, fulfilling a purpose for me. It will be helping me step into a sense of peace and joy and purpose in my life by turning my pain into my purpose. So, for instance, if there was somebody who was raised in an orphanage and there was no abuse, they got lucky, there wasn't abuse, and they got plenty of, you know, meals and everything and toys to play with, but there wasn't anybody hugging them. There wasn't any warmth, any physical affection and warmth. And they just felt like that was the big thing that was missing in their lives. And so they might say, I'm going to use a significant amount of my time, intelligence, money, and energy to make sure that, you know, 100,000 kids are raised in a warm, nurturing, loving environment, if they, even, you know, especially if they don't have their own parents. And then what do you do? Well, you look for ways to make that happen. You either join forces with a nonprofit or a government agency that's already doing that, or you start your own nonprofit. Or if you've got particular skills in you know, a therapeutic setting, as a therapist, you might start working in a facility that already does that. And that's how he recommends that people turn their pain into their purpose. And then, of course, there's, I mentioned already, the passion test. And with the passion test, she asks you to list the things that you're passionate about. And so the things you really care about. And so I believe that when she started, she wanted you to have at least 20 on the list. And then what you would do is you would rate them according to the most important. And so you'd start by, at your conscious logical level, what parts of these things are you saying are most important to you? So you might have time with family. You might have your art. You might have politics. You might have, you know, your career, it's like your vocation rather than just a job. So you list these things out and you rate them. So you've got the most important at the top, at a first level, conscious logical. And then you need a partner. And you give that list to your partner. And your partner asks you, okay, and just play along. If you could only have number one on this list or number two on this list, which one would you pick? Oh, they're both so high up, I can't do without either one of them. Right, I got that, but just play along. If you had to choose between one or two, and oftentimes people say, well, okay, number two is it. Number two wins. And then your partner says, all right, Now, if you could only have number two or number three, which one would win? And you keep going down the list like that until one of them has beaten out all the others on a do-or-die evaluation. And now that becomes your new number one. And then you go back through the list again. And you say, okay, if I could only do number one or number three, which one would... And then if I could only do number three or number four, which one wins? Number three. If I could only do number three or number five, which one wins? Number three wins again. If I could only have number three or number six, which one wins? That's a tough one. I guess maybe number six. Okay, if I could only have number six or number seven, and you go through it that way until you've got a top five most important things in your life, and this is what she calls your passion. And you write those down, and the way you use the passion test is you read that to yourself multiple times every day. You read it to yourself in the morning. You read it to yourself multiple times throughout the day. And you read it to yourself as you're going to bed at night. And again, if you have any thoughts about, I'm going to spend a significant amount of my time, intelligence, money, and energy, I'm going to compare it to the top priorities in my life, my passion in my life, and if it would detract from any of those, I don't do it. If it would add to one of those, I do it. And again, the purpose for this is to simply focus my energy to get more results more quickly. The focusing of energy is a phenomenally important thing. The example I heard Dr. Michael Rice use all these years ago was you can stand outside on a warm day. It's 85 or 90 degrees outside and it's sunny. You can stand out there for an hour and not get hurt or burned. You might get a little pink, but you won't get, sunburn. And yet, if you go out there and you take like just a 3-inch magnifying glass, either plastic or glass, and you hold it just the right distance from a leaf or a tree, and the focal point of that 3 inches of sunlight, I mean, you've got sunlight hitting all over your body, but just 3 inches focused into a tiny point is enough to burn right through that wood or burn through the leaf in a matter of moments sometimes, minutes at the most. So it's the same energy that's been out there that's been pouring down on you for an hour and hasn't caused any pain, and yet if it's focused, it can burn right through a piece of wood. A tiny bit of it is focused, can burn right through the wood. Wonderful visual example, wonderful mental idea to motivate me to say, you know what? I know that's true in the world. I want to apply that knowledge in my life. I want to be more focused. I want to have a primary and secondary purpose, or I want to have a Greg Moore's heart virtue, or I want to have the woman who created the passion test is escaping me, but I want to have the passion test in my life. I want to have this focusing agent as a tool that I use on a regular basis. So these things have been coming up in my caseload, and they came up in the support group in the last session or two, so I thought I would mention it. This, Dr. Michael Rice has a tool for that. The passion test is a tool for that. Greg Moore's heart virtue is a tool for that. And I have to recommend exploring that if you have any feeling that, you know what, I'd like to have more clarity about, or I'd like to get better results in my life. So again, plenty of time for conversation, 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1 on your phone, we can have a conversation. I have a little bit of confusion going on here because there's somebody with an 828 area code that's on the call twice, and I wonder how that's happening and whether or not we're having technical difficulties. So here's hoping we're being heard. Nobody's raising a hand, so I will come back to the way of mastery that we were talking about in lesson 17 the last time we talked. And in this lesson, in lesson 16 and 17, they're talking about how we had existence, we had consciousness before choosing to come into the physical realm. And the consciousness itself started to coalesce into an egoic consciousness. And then the decision was made from that egoic consciousness to come into physical form. And then as that focus of consciousness on the physical, as the fetus developing inside the mother's womb, whenever there's trauma energy or emotional trauma energy, physical trauma, in that process, the consciousness, the soul, you as a soul, might want to back away from that process, might want to withdraw some awareness and consciousness, and there can be a disruption in the development of the physical tissue from that withdrawal. But if you get to the point where it happens that you stay focused long enough and the fetus develops and you are there pouring your life force and your consciousness into it, then you begin experiencing this sensory realm of third dimension, third dimensionality. And you're influenced by the dynamics, the emotional dynamics of your mother and your father and all the immediate family members and the events of the world around you. So then it picks up with the idea of the next section titled The Journey of Awakening Begins. And the text reads, therefore, the journey of awakening requires, from the moment of birth on, it requires the development of certain motor skills, certain verbal skills, certain social skills, so that hopefully, if you're very lucky, by the time you're about 20 or 21 years of age, you're ready to start finding out who you are as an individual. The text reads, it is very, very rare for an individual, especially in your cultural time frame, to emerge at the age of 10 or 12 or 14 or even 17 with a deep sense of themselves as being apart from the parents and apart from the family or the culture. You think that you are yourself, but you're really just a bundle of reactivity, seeking to find approval, seeking to find safety, seeking to find survival or friendship in the world. That is, you're already caught up in the perception that what you experience is coming to you from the outside and that you must therefore seek to adapt yourself to it. At this level, you are not yet alive in the truest sense of that word. And if you're very fortunate during the time frame of the 20s, you merely experience greater degrees of freedom, greater degrees of making your own decisions and experiencing the outcomes. This can be a very turbulent time. Still, you will believe that you know yourself, and yet you've not even begun to know yourself. Again, this is for the majority of you. As you go into your 30s, there's an opportunity now. Spirit begins to speak to you. Situations begin to emerge that require of you deeper understanding. If you are very fortunate, you'll have begun to realize the great influence of the parents and what they've, the influence they've had on you. Usually, this is a state of rebellion. Internally, you will begin to individuate more clearly. And then the spiritual search often begins in the 30s in earnest. You may have been aware of that earlier in the 20s. Again, this is not a hard and fast rule, but generally by the 30s, this is the time to truly begin the answer for the yearning of the soul. And now the egoic consciousness has been fundamentally successful. That is, if you have found a way to create your own survival and you've developed the personalities that allow you to interact with the insanity of the third dimensional human realm, if you've had no major calamities or traumas, if you've had no major failures, you might continue just coasting along into your 40s with the smugness of thinking that you've got it all together. You may have found ways to avoid the fundamental gnawing question. Questions like, what is my purpose? Why have I come to this planet? I'm more than just this. I'm pure soul. I'm pure spirit. I know there is more to it than this. Close quotes. If you've been able to successfully keep yourself distracted, that question may not have fully arisen. The egoic consciousness is merely that part of the body-mind that is responsible for keeping you physically alive. It is fueled by the desire for survival, the desire for safety. It wishes to create a certain set and of order around you because through order, it can anticipate what will be required to keep the physiological organism functioning. Now, what occurs is that somewhere along the line, usually very early in life, you begin to identify with the egoic mind and include your psychic state, your mental perceptions. The ideas you begin to learn about the world begin to be enfolded in the physiological individual because that is really the home of the ego. The body is the home of the ego. The body-mind, including the brain structure and the higher dimensions of functionality of the body, which is all that the brain is, it's just a higher level of organizational principles and characteristics. And what is it there to do? To help the body function. So a further step of forgetting who you are occurs when you begin to sense yourself as being identified with the particular perceptions, the particular belief structures that are floating around in the higher mind of the body itself. At this level, you have forgotten the soul. You have forgotten, capital S, spirit. You've become identified as, let's say, an American or an Afro-American or a Caucasian, as a boy or a girl, as a fan of some sports team, as a lover of ice cream. You begin to take on and create what are called principles, never realizing that the principles often are merely the product or the outcome of your social learning. And that began from the time when you were in the tomb and from the time that you were conditioned by the schooling of your culture. Many of you have gone so far as to believe that you are an Alabaman or a Washingtonian or a Californian because someone has told you that that is where you live. And although you've never found a boundary upon the face of the earth that says, here's California and here's Nevada, you have found a sign that someone has created, and you've read that sign and you've believed it. And then you've created an identification with one small aspect of life. Many of you are only now emerging to sense yourself as a global citizen. something that transcends being an American or a Canadian or a South African or a Russian. So you begin to sense this process whereby you keep making yourself smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller by taking on psychic patterns from the parents, from your peers, from the society around you. The spiritual path begins when, for some reason, something begins to whisper to you. Something like, quote, this is not who you are. This is not why you have come here. You have come to heal your sense of separation from your Creator. You've come to realize the capital T truth, close quotes. When that begins to whisper to you, then egoic consciousness begins with the shock of the moment of conception that brings your attention to be completely fixated on and as the physiological form that's beginning to merge and emerge as a web of relationship in this third dimensional reality. And then this begins to color your vision and color your understanding. That's what gives you your unique individuality in the world. As you grow, as you emerge, as you move through certain experiences, you become colored by what you have had to do to survive. You become colored by the psychic patterns and imprints of those around you. You think you're thinking your own thoughts, when what is often the case is that you're merely parroting all that has come into your computer bank, into the brain, and into the body. Now, it is quite true that all this began because there was a resonance between the web of relationships of the parents of the society and the society and your own unique quality of consciousness. And that resonance was there prior to birth. So in this sense, karma can be said to exist. Karma simply means action, the effect of. So that when you drop a pebble in the pond, you create a certain ripple. As long as you continue that ripple by dropping the same pebble in the pond, you get the same results. And part of those results is the need to be identified with only this vibrational field of energy that we call physicality. Until you decide to change the momentum of the ripples you are creating in the depth of the mind, you cannot begin to ascend from the third dimension. The desire to do so is always within you. That is, it may be dormant, and yet the desire to know the Creator must necessarily be within each soul, since the Creator and the creation itself is your reality. So the truth is, you have fallen asleep. And at some point, there comes the urge to awaken. When it comes, it is unmistakable. The fireworks may not occur, but a shift happens within your being, and you know that you can never return to the way it was. You can never again pretend that life is only what you are seeing through the senses. Once that awakening happens, now your soul begins to speak. The connection that was once lost begins to be reestablished. It was never really lost. It was just forgotten. It was suppressed. It became the background instead of the foreground. And now it begins to whisper in the depths of your being. It comes to you in the form of your dreams. You begin to notice books that you never noticed before. You might wander into the spiritual section of a bookstore, not even understanding what compelled you to do so. And there, you pick up a copy of this book, The Way of Mastery, or the Yeshua Letters, or A Course in Miracles, or some other such book. And then it begins to trigger within you a thirst and a longing. Perhaps a friend suddenly invites you to come to a workshop. It may be the kind that you've never been to before. And yet, when you go, something triggers inside of you. Something touches you. Something begins to awaken. You may not notice it, but it actually triggers a physiological state within the body, within the chakra or energy system. The heart begins to stir in its slumber, and the mind thirsts for knowledge, a knowledge unlike any that it has gathered in all of its identification with the egoic consciousness. The longing to awaken has come. And from this moment, though you do not understand it, you begin to attract, slowly at first, perhaps stumbling a bit now and then, you begin to attract exactly those situations that will keep prodding you to look even deeper. Perhaps a meditation teacher comes. A prayer group comes that you feel called to join. You begin the process of your own study. And a new question is emerging. No longer is the question, how can I survive? How can I make money? How can I do all of these things? Rather, a new question emerges in your mind. Who am I? There may be many forms of that question, but the question remains this one question. Who am I? What am I? From where did I come? What is life? What is God? What is creation? How can there be anything here at all? These questions begin to stir in the mind. Often they first make their appearance in some form around the age of 10 to 12 when you enter into the stage of life that is your first taste of individuation. Just like when a child was born and began to sense that it was other than the mother's body, at around the age of 10 to 12, you begin to sense that you're other than your mother and your father. You begin to sense that there is something that wants to think for itself and be for itself. Often those questions will begin to come, and that's the first stirring. And usually those questions are not attended to, because there's so much else to do. You still need to learn to think, need to learn to drive a car, you need to learn to balance a checkbook. And then later those questions occur again, generally in the early to mid-20s. But again, the momentum is to become established as a physiological being, and so the questions are suppressed into the 30s. And for some, most definitely into the 40s, then those questions begin to press up upon the consciousness. Now, you know how to make money. You know how to balance a checkbook. You've done these things in the world. You've had sex. You've baked cakes. You've thrown birthday parties. You've gotten drunk. You've done it all, but something else is gnawing within you. This is also a point of great challenge, and you ask yourself, what will I be committed unto? Will I be committed to love or fear? Will fear run me? Will the very principles that I've identified myself with and have utilized to ensure my survival and the ordering of my life, will these things become more important than realizing my true self and awakening the Christ within? That's a challenge. Reminds me of our conversation yesterday with Susan Bingham. I can't have an uninterrupted hour. My identification with my life as it is too strong. this whole idea of committing an uninterrupted hour to my spiritual growth. Can't have it. And the challenge is on. And the challenge really comes from within the self. It really isn't. Well, there can be people that make their money and they make a big thing about, you know, challenging you to not play small and come on and get into your greatness, and they cannot generate what can come from within you. They might be the spark that ignites the fire that's within you, but they can't create the fire within you. The next section is titled Dismantling the Blocks to Spirit. And it says, for you see, awakening requires a dismantling of the structures of consciousness by which you have been ordering your perceptions in the third dimension. Ultimately, to truly awaken requires the dismantling of the very subtle, deeply embedded patterns of perception that were already making up the soul prior to the incarnation in this life. Now, most people can't even wrap their mind around that last sentence. Ultimately, to truly awaken requires that you completely dismantle the very subtle, deeply embedded patterns of perception. Well, we think of perception as happening in the physical realm, in third-dimensional reality. And it says this was happening prior to your soul taking up an incarnation in this life. So before you had physicality this time around. These deeply embedded patterns of perception, this is what Dr. Michael Rice talks about in the cross-generational patterns and the generational work we have to do. We inherit traumas and trials and teachings and skills and geniuses. We inherit strengths and weaknesses and patterns of consciousness from three and four generations back. And, of course, where did they get theirs? From three and four generations back. So to completely awaken means to undo these patterns of perception that were already making up your soul prior to your incarnation in this life. It says, the text goes on and says, the slate must be wiped clean so that all that remains is the reality of true spirit, capital S spirit, with no filament or trace of the egoic consciousness left behind. This is not an easy thing to do. And yet it requires no effort except the effort to be love, capital L love, L-O-V-E, to remember your nature as love. Love is the great healer. Love is that which erases the imprint in the depth of the subtle soul. The patterns that you brought forth with you as a soul are like a magnet. That is, they attract energy states in the physical dimension that experience, and they are resonated with those patterns. Often you say that you, quote, fall in love, close quotes. It's just that you've come into contact with another field of energy that happens to fit, like a hand in a glove, with the very patterns of consciousness that you carry in the depth of your being. Old memories from other incarnations are triggered when you visit a certain physical location, and the emotion feels so good and warm in the heart that you think, wow, surely this is where I must have lived. I must now live on this planet. Or, surely this is whom I must spend my life with, close quotes. Yet, all of it is emerging as the result of your karma. That is, the patterns and the effects that have come into those patterns. Awakening does require vigilance. Awakening requires that rather than merely going with whatever reactions of the third dimensional being you experience, instead you begin to question. You begin to observe. You begin to feel deeply, and you begin to think more deeply. You begin to engage yourself in some form of spiritual practice, whether it be meditation or prayer or something else. All these things are modalities which interrupt the momentum of being caught up in the third dimensional experience. You interrupt the pattern of being caught up in the world long enough to sit quietly for half an hour, or to chant, or to walk. You do something in a different way. And you are beginning to turn the momentum of the mind back upon itself. You're beginning to become self-observant rather than world-observant. And now for all of you that would like to quicken and hasten that process, the answer is very simple. Spend more time becoming self-observant and less time being concerned with what is going on in the world. While that's happening, you're called to spend no time blaming the world for your state of being. Not your parents, not the society, not God. You're called to own your creation of your life experience. The teaching from the very first lesson in the Way of Mastery says you only experience what you have chosen, the effects of what you have chosen. It's in the first axiom. It's on page 5. Right now we're on page 211, right? So way back on page 5 it says, hey, look, if you would like to begin this process of awakening, all you have to do is let into your mind this truth. Just chew on this. Swish this around in your mouth like somebody who's trying to taste a fine wine. And here's the thought, quote, nothing that you experience is caused by anything outside of you. You experience only the effects of your own choice, close quotes. So here we are, 206 pages later, and it says, for all of you who would like to quicken and hasten this process, the answer is very simple. Simply spend less time in being concerned with what's going on in the world. Spend more time observing how you're creating your own life experience, and spend no time blaming anyone or anything for your state of being. Not your parents, not your society, not God, not anyone or anything except your own choice. Owning how you have created your experience of life. And that's the way to accelerate your spiritual growth. And putting your egoic consciousness in its proper place as a simple tool to be used for physical survival for as long as you're in the body and on the planet. So that's our offering for today. I thank you all for being here. I will remind us all that we have two support groups coming up again next week on Tuesday and Thursday. And all the information you would need to join us there is available on the MindShiftersAcademy.org website. And in the meantime, we encourage everyone to remember that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are the energy of love and creation expressing in form, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. I appreciate you. Hope you have
You're
a good
welcome.
Evening and a good week.
Have a wonderful show and a great weekend.
Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. And today is Friday, April the 19th, 2024. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And we do have a question. I was just giving Michael a worksheet there. We had a question about one of our worksheets called the Mind Goal Management. And I wanted further explanation on that, so Michael's going to cover that when he gets on. And we're glad that you're with us, and looks like a good crowd on the switchboard. And I am connecting to Podbean. Whoops, except I can't mute myself when I'm talking to you, right? Okay, so getting both switchboards going so that we can tap into audiences in different places. We're glad we have this technology. It is a learning curve for us, but we're getting there. And so Michael's with us now, so I'm going to just say welcome, Michael. You're muted. You are muted.
Excuse me, mute challenge. So thank you, dear heart. I'm here, and welcome, everybody. Glad you're here. Glad we get to move forward with the conversation, and Jeannie's got a question for us before we get into the Kubler's Manuscript Enlightenment book.
Okay. So she says, we flip back to her text. She has, as soon as she saw it on the website that you were going to be in Florida, she booked a flight and has registered for the 3 days that you're down there. And says, I was up until 1 o'clock last night, or this morning, reading and reading and reading on the ego and forgiveness in the Course in Miracles. So I have two assignments, two papers that I have to do this morning, and it's going to do the evaluation. And I want to ask more about the Mind Goal Management Sheet and how you use this.
Okay, well, I wonder if it sounds like perhaps she has been using the sheet, and so maybe there's some specific questions. So maybe we want to wait until we have her on the phone and we get into questions on the Mind Goal Management Sheet. It's a worksheet, for anybody who doesn't know what it is. It's a worksheet that we use in the Getting the Stress You Need workshop. And looking at the fact that the mind, through our genetics, tends to have literally, who knows what kind of number you could put on, millions, maybe billions of unresolved goals. And people tend to live in a world where life comes along and resonates something for them, and whatever's going on out of genes, out of carbon-based memory, tends to formulate into goals and drive behavior, which would be kind of a purposeless life. But just fulfilling energetic patterns from the past isn't ever really going to accomplish what a life is about. And so the Mind Goal Management Sheet is about strengthening the higher faculties of being, which is the faculty of will, and how to exercise and develop that faculty of will to bring it online so that we can manage our minds directly. So that's a sheet that we teach in the both in Laws of Living and in the Getting the Stress You Need. But I'm thinking that seeing as how we haven't laid a foundation for this, perhaps we wait until she's available to do some questions one-on-one, unless she happens to be on the show, and we can go with the question or questions that she has.
She is not, but I just got a text from someone and said, how do we find out about your Florida trip? So if you go to our website, wygen.org, and click on schedule, there is, you know, all the things like the monthly membership, intuitive development, all that. If you go on down there, you'll see a picture of Michael, and it says live events, Sarasota, Florida. If you click on learn more, there is all of the information. You can download the flyer. He's going to be there Friday, Saturday, Sunday. That is
May 4th and 5th. Weekend.
And so all the information is there, and you can download the flyer.
Yeah, we're going to be in Sarasota, and on Friday night we're going to do a free and open Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop. Saturday we're doing a Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing, and Sunday afternoon doing Codependence to Interdependence. And it's a medical center down there, Rejuvenation, I believe it's called. A gentleman has been doing my work for the last 30-some years. And do you recall what John's center is called, sweetie? I don't have the flyer in front of me.
I actually do. Hold on, let me get it out. It is Advanced Rejuvenation.
Rejuvenation, that's it.
Advanced Rejuvenation, and it's on Northeast Avenue in Sarasota, Florida.
And Dr. Jean Laurence does a really wide array of some pretty cutting-edge stuff. You might recall the last time I was down visiting with him in Sarasota, I shared how I sat in on a procedure where he takes a needle. It's about a foot long. Costs, if I remember correctly, it was $1,800 for the needle. You only use it once. And you actually puncture into the hip, through the hip bone, collect from inside the hip bone stem cells, take them out, put them in a centrifuge, get them ready, and then using another piece of technology, looking at exactly where injuries are, say, for instance, in a joint. This one was, if I remember correctly, was a shoulder joint. And so using ultrasound, you could see exactly where the joint was damaged, then taking those stem cells and putting them right into the joint where they rebuild the joint. Some pretty amazing technology that Dr. Jean Laurence is using. So, and he's been doing the forgiveness work for a number of years. And I've spoken at his facility a couple times over the years. And he asked if we'd come down and do another series. So that's what we'll be doing the first weekend in May. So come and play.
And actually,
beyond
you'll
that,
be
Jeannie
doing that.
Right, I'll be doing that. Ginny will be coming back and taking care of Ari Rain.
Yeah, the other set of grandparents are also gone that next week, so it's up to
yep.
me.
And then I'll be flying in the following Saturday so that Jeannie can leave. Well, actually, we're going to do Ari Rain's recital, and then Jeannie will be heading out for a week's vacation with a friend of hers. She's going to Florida to hang out near the beach. So, and I get to stay in Bristol and tend the garden. Hey, how cool is that? So do we have anybody else in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room, sweetie?
It's all quiet. We've got a couple of people on Podbean in the listener section and chat room. And then we've got a bunch of people on the switchboard today, but there are no hands up. So I would say go for the enlightenment.
Okay. Unless somebody has a question for us, comment, we've been getting into some issues the last few days.
A hand just went up.
Go for it.
I think it is Mr. Terry Bowling, 336. You're on the air.
Hello,
welcome,
folks.
Sir. Hey there.
All right.
How do you be?
I be real well. the doctor did say I had a torn bicep yesterday. So I don't know what to do about that or what you do with a torn bicep, but they're going to send me to another guy who's going to hopefully refer me to some type of physical therapy and do some kind of scan, test, all that. See if they'll need to do surgery, which I prefer not to, if at all possible. I don't understand why they have to do surgery, but I don't understand a teared muscle either. So that's one of my big issues. But what I wanted to share about was that for the last 2.5 hours, I've been going through this process of trying to get a turn signal bulb replaced on my truck. Okay, and I thought...
2.5 hours?
Two and a half hours. Started at the Dodge dealership. It was an aftermarket housing that had been put into the truck, so they don't even handle it. They said, but if you go to the auto zone and get a bulb, we'll put it in for you. I went to the auto place, and they said, well, it's not that easy. You'll have to pull over to the mechanic over there, and if he can get us a bulb description, we'll do that. So I did, and I went over there, and then I went from there back, and I walked from across the street from the mechanic to the parts place to the mechanic to the parts place to the mechanic to the parts place, three different bulbs, and they finally said, well, we're going to strike out here. It's an aftermarket LED. And then the one guy did finally determine it was an order online only product, that whoever put it in there was a bit of a backyard mechanic guy. But then the mechanic, he says, well, let's try this other little method. And he slipped a conventional bulb in, which would work, but he didn't have an amber one because it's for the turn signal. So then I go back to the Advanced Auto. They didn't carry them up across to the Auto Zone. They did have them. And then I came back. So that was the process, and the mechanic didn't charge me anything. And the bulb cost me $9.97.
So what's this bringing up for you, Terry?
But say that again. Oh, actually, what it's bringing up for me is appreciation and joy and wonder and awareness. And when I came out once, this one young lady came up and says, well, can you help me with something? I said, maybe. I've learned not to automatically say yes to anybody. It's like, well, it depends on what you want. And so she says, will you just watch my brake light and see if it's working? I said, sure, I can do that. So her brake light was fixed. She'd done a self-repair on the brake light and was on her. Well, she says, yay, now I can go get my car inspected. So as falling back to the previous question, appreciation, joy, understanding, and I play a game with myself about, oh, how can I connect with each person on a personal level? What can I do to make it a true human connection and to maintain a space of love and presence? So that's what I did. So I got to meet a half a dozen different characters here. Yeah, and a half a dozen different characters and maintained active presence of love, and I consciously canceled goals, well, at least five times, you know, around different things. I kept canceling the goal, and I kept holding space for it to be handled in a good way, and it was resolved, you know. And for $9.97, and it was really a beautiful experience. And so I had to contribute to the foundation that upon using your tools over and over and over and over and over. So that's what I wanted to check in and offer, and it'll be interesting to see what comes up in the reading or what anyone else may have to bring conversational-wise. But I would call it a very successful bulb exchange.
So let me see if I understand correctly. What you're offering, if I'm catching your drift, is that through all that, there was a time when it would not have been quite as holy an encounter?
Oh, yes. Yeah, you can chalk that one up.
What would that encounter have looked like at another time, Terry?
Frustration, hostility, anger, high blood pressure, sweating on the brow, yelling. Yeah.
Whew, nice to be free of that stuff, eh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's nothing so important, you know, in my life, and more especially, I don't know if it's just because I'm in the fourth quarter of life, so to speak, but really there's nothing important enough for me to trade peace and serenity for. Now, I don't always remember that, you know, but I do know how to get back to it.
Mm. Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
I hear you.
Yeah, so it's Happy Friday.
Probably a good lesson in there for all of us.
Mm-hmm. And you're going to be tending the garden by yourself,
Terry,
this weekend? Yeah.
Thank you, Terry. Lesson received. No, not this weekend, no, but when we come back, we've got a week vacation set up with kids. And then I go to Florida and do the 3-day workshop there.
And when I get
back here, then Jeannie goes to Florida so she's going to have the baby, then I'll have the baby, and we'll be switching places.
That sounds like a nice, pleasant month of May.
Looking forward to it. Yes. Looking forward to it and recognizing that what's the reason to bring anything else to the occasion other than the fact that something else is inside of us? So good lesson, Terry. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Now, you got a text to select your mind shifter numbers?
Oh, great.
If you send that, you send your numbers back to me, then you'll have your mind shifter for the Still Point Breathing Workshop this weekend. And we'll look forward to seeing you tomorrow at 11 o'clock.
All right.
Cool. Nice work, my friend.
All right.
All right. Have a blessed one. Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. So that raised a question. Someone in Podbean says, okay, if the doctors can't find out what's going on, how can you heal the physical pain? Would it be looking at generational or how would you know where to target your thought and your work?
My take would be all of the above. You know, if there's an emotional component to what sounds like a physical injury and, you know, who knows what is behind the physical injury, one could do some worksheets around that to look at, you know, what's going on that I allowed this injury to occur. But all of the above might look like, gee, you know, there's a muscle that's in two pieces, and if it doesn't get to where those muscle fibers are connected with each other, then it's not likely to grow back together properly, so the option might be we're going to do surgery. And so, you know, I assume they'll do an X-ray and look inside, and you know, that you know, thank God we're in a world where we have the miracle of some of the technology that we have. I mean, the other side of the coin is pretty tragic a lot of times in the fact, you know, as we were talking about on the show the other day, where, you know, the third leading cause of death in America is properly prescribed drugs. Pretty tragic, but on the other side of it, that we have the technology and the genius minds that, this muscle's torn in two, and so he knows how to go in with the least damage and sew it back together so it heals properly. You know, in each case, all of the above is always going to be the answer. You know, it sounds like Terry's pretty peaceful with the injury as it stands. If there was some sort of irritation or anger or anguish going on, then, you know, there'd be a place for worksheets. Otherwise, follow through with what seems to be the medical procedure needed. And be grateful for it. That would be my input on what to do with that.
And I was just, Louise Hay, and I'll put the link to this. She's, of course, left her body, but she has a website called Alchemy of Healing, and she lists different things, you know, and what it could represent mentally. It's a really good site. I agree with a lot of the things that she's got on there. She has... Muscles is resistance to new experiences or represent the ability to move in life, and the arm represents the capacity and ability to hold the experiences of life. So, you know, if those were true or felt like they resonated, then, you know, perhaps doing worksheets on, you know, being able to hold to an experience that you're going through at this moment. Now, Terry's going through a lot of experiences at the moment.
Well, and Terry was just sharing with us a few days ago all of the drama going on in his life around moving. If you recall, we had that conversation just a couple of days ago, moving out of a rented home into another rented home, and then being there just 2 days, and the landlord in the new home saying, "Oh, I'm not sure I want to rent this place." He was in about months and months, so moving maybe. And that's interesting that Louise Hay comes up with that one. But we hold the space, Terry, that you're settled in your home until you're ready to pick up and create a permanent place of your own. I know that's in the offing, so we'll hold the space for that.
So the question is, why rely on surgery? If I am in Christ, I can heal anything. But, you know, sometimes it's bigger than we are. You know, if it's generational, you know. And like Michael said, it's awesome that doctors do have the knowledge, you know, to make repairs. It's not always the ultimate fix. But do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, my take, you know, I've had people who speak in terms of, you know, abilities beyond one's current level of power and ability. Like, you know, gee, I want a glass of water, and I know that with my mind, I know theoretically with my mind, I can pick that glass of water up and get it to my mouth and drink it. But if I sit here and wait till I get the water in my mouth, by using my mind, and I know it's possible, I may die of thirst. I have a hand, I reach the hand out, and I take a drink of water. So is it possible? Yes, definitely. Could that muscle be put back together with my mind and with my inner work? I believe it could. And if I got a surgeon that says, hey, I can pop a couple stitches in that and take care of it, I, for one, will be heading for, cancel the thought if I'd ever need it, but I'd be heading for the surgeon's office, which I've never needed that in my life, but no. So I think that being realistic is an important part of the process. And if you've demonstrated that you've got the kind of realistic skills that you can take a part of an energy system that is meant to be in one piece and it's broken into, such as a torn muscle, if you've demonstrated the level of capability where you can put that back together and mend it with your mind, then, you know, more power to you. But if you haven't, then, you know, I know of people, and actually there's a particular fellow that I'm thinking of back a few years ago that had some kidney issues, and he decided he just didn't want, he just hated doctors, and he was going to fix it himself. And unfortunately, he, where it would have been a fairly easy fix had he gone the medical route. I mean, you know, there's some awesome doctors out there doing a lot of awesome work. Yes, there are a lot of drugs that are doing a lot of damage too. But in this particular case, this gentleman, if he had, when he first had the signal that he was having trouble with his kidneys, had gone and had it looked at and had it taken care of by a medical professional, he'd still be alive today. And he's not. Hasn't been for 3 or 4 years now. And, you know, he decided he could do it and he was going to do it on his own. And he couldn't and he didn't, and it cost him his life. So to me, it's like, let's be practical and real. You know, there are perspectives. And does that mean I'm not going to put the effort into doing the inner work required? You know, visualization's powerful. There's some powerful tools to use. And sometimes the pragmatic thing is to take the assistance that's needed and in the moment. So, Miss Jeannie, unless you've got somebody else with a hand up or something happening in the chat room.
Well, I hit the wrong button.
Okay.
I am. I hit the wrong button and I must have disconnected myself. So, yes, I think Terry's back on again, so I'm going to turn his speaker on. Terry, did you raise your hand a second time?
Yes, I disconnected myself once. I put myself in and out of the queue twice. So I was like, all right, thank you. So I really appreciate the question, and I've been pondering that very scenario, that very thought, those very questions myself, because I want to see myself move through this healing without surgery, okay? I'm all open, and I'm aware there's been some situations in my life where I had to have surgery. I'm not convinced that this is one. And to me, that's the primary factor. Do I really believe that this can be healed without surgery? And the answer for me is yes. Now, we'll see. I've appreciated the Louise Hay words as I've studied her work in the past. And if you've got a chance to send me those things, Jenny, that'd be great. Or just reference where you got them. The one book, Heal Your Life, or something like that, but it sounds like this may be a different book. So
no, it's actually that one, but I will send them to you.
Okay, great. And so in visualizing, holding the space, I see no reason in my mind's eye, in my consciousness, or for any thing that would not allow for, if a muscle is torn, which it had broken or stretched loose here, and I could feel where it knotted up, it broke at the, you know, ripped at the bicep and then pulled away and cinched up around my shoulder bone, my socket here. So it's like this knot, you know, and it's reduced my mobility considerably and added a whole different pain experience to my body, a new one. I didn't think that was truly possible, but it is.
You really didn't need that, did you?
No. But I can also, at the same time, I could see by relaxing, and especially, you know, with the breathing and letting go, that there's no reason that muscle can't relax back into the position that it needs to be in and then knit itself together. There's no reason that can't happen. Now, I may not be ready to receive and accept that and do that, but I feel pretty confident. And we'll just chalk this one up as a little experiment, and we're going to perform this experiment and see how that unfolds with the breath work and the worksheets. And core, again, is my belief system. I believe it with all my heart that it can be restructured, that my body can restructure itself, and that's in the cards. So thank you for that extra little piece of support, and that was a good question and a good reminder from the audience and prompting that. And there again, that's why the therapeutic value of one human helping another is without parallel, is that you get to offer me pieces of support that I can't see when I'm lost in my own unconsciousness, you know? And it's just so essential, so essential. So that's what I got for that.
Cool. I thought it was interesting that Louise hit the nail on the head with that moving thing. It's like, ouch.
Exactly. Dead center,
and
if I can say that.
And it would probably behoove you to look at, do some searching as to what would create such a tension in the muscle that the that much strain on it that would actually pull away. And that's going to probably need to be resolved before the muscle is going to be able
fear.
To go back into place.
It was fear, and it was centered around financial fear, because that was what was driving my efforts to finish that project so that I could get the check, so that I could cash the check and have the money to do this. So the core was fear. You know, you can almost always distill it down to fear of some form or another. And then the fear was based on some perceived lack of financial support which again, that to me boils down to a lack of trust in the universe, complete trust and surrender. It's like, do I believe, you know, what's going on here or not? Do I believe what I believe or not? You know what I'm saying?
Yep, yep. And then should you be able to let go of the tension in the muscles so that it can put itself back in place, then you might want to consult with someone who's worked with tissue damage like that, and chances are that the time period that is going to be need to be immobilized for a time period to be able to do that knitting and repair. And so that might be reason to have some professional input as well.
Mm-hmm. And I'm getting some instructions just to intuitively, I'm helping to massage that muscle back into place, just gently letting it go lay down, helping it lay down so that it can find its matching component there and knit back up properly and strongly.
Have you done the worksheets around the fear to let the tension in the muscle be removed?
No, I just uncovered it, like, right now.
Mm. Cool.
Yeah.
So what would the goal be? How it all ties together, the moving component of it, the fear component?
The goal is to be cared for, to be supported.
Mm. Well, know that you're supported and that there's a whole community of people right now holding the space and visualizing with you and for you. The healing is around that trust issue and around the tissue anomaly that came about as a result of it. Just about every time that you call into the show, Terry, I go back to the show that you called into just as you were heading after your 2-year stint at Heartland, as you were heading to Asheville, and the call you made from the hotel or just after you left the hotel, where you woke up that morning totally physiologically connected to the presence of love at a depth that you'd just never experienced before. And I look to resonate that because that's probably part of what's going to produce that tissue healing and the mental emotional healing as well around being so powerfully connected to love and trust that everything you need is always there for you.
As you speak those words, I can see myself in that space. I can see the space exactly what it looked like. And even though that was in 2010, so that was 13 years ago, and still it's just as fresh. When it's accessed, it's just as fresh as the moment that I was talking to you on the phone.
Well, whenever I think of it, it lights up a warmth in me just to remember hearing, you know, the excitement, the enthusiasm, the power of you waking up free of that old demon fear and just being totally connected to love. That was a powerful call. So when you call into the show, that one always runs through my mind.
Nice.
So holding a space for you to be fully connected to the corollary of that experience in the space you're in today.
Hmm.
And producing healing on every level, as well as support and abundance on every level.
Yeah.
And being able to trust that. It's a great section in the Course in Miracles on the development of trust in the teacher's manual, if I remember correctly. That might be a good piece of reading to do.
Are you looking for it, or they're just pausing? You have two more hands.
Mm-hmm. I was just looking to on the internet to tap into it. Development of trust. And just briefly, it is from the teacher's manual. And first one must go through what might be called a period of undoing. This need not be painful, but it's usually so experienced. Seems as if things are being taken away, and it's rarely understood initially that their lack of value is merely being recognized. How can lack of value be perceived unless the perceiver is in a position where he must see things in a different light? He is not yet at a point where he can make the shift entirely internally, and so the plan will sometimes call for changes in what seem to be external circumstances. These changes are always helpful. When the teacher of love has learned that much, they go on to the second stage. And then that second stage is a period of sorting out. This is always somewhat difficult because having learned that changes in one's life are always helpful, one must now decide. You know, you sound like you're right in the middle of this winter, like you've got this part of the lesson down pat. Decide all things on the basis of whether they increase helpfulness or hamper it. You will find that many, if not most, things he valued before will merely hinder his ability to transfer what he's learned to new situations as they arise. And that's what I heard you talking about when you were talking about your running around and where you recognize the value of hostility was not had zero to do with your experience, which many people would have found probably quite, would have brought up a lot of frustration. Because one has valued what is really valueless, he will not generalize a lesson for fear of loss and sacrifice. It takes great learning to understand that all things, events, encounters, and circumstances are helpful. It is only to the extent to which they are helpful that any degree of reality should be accorded them in this world of illusion. The word value can apply to nothing else. Third stage, we call the period of relinquishment. If this is interpreted as giving up the desirable, it will engender enormous conflict. Few teachers of love escape this distress entirely. There is, however, no point in sorting out the valuable from the valueless unless the next obvious step is taken. Therefore, the period of overlap is left to be one in which the teacher of love feels called upon to sacrifice his own best interests on behalf of truth. He's not realized as yet how wholly impossible such a demand would be. He can learn this only as he actually does give up the valueless. Through this, he learns that where he anticipated grief, he finds happy lightheartedness instead. There's your what you shared with us this morning that was going on with the car. Happy lightheartedness. Where he thought something was asked of him, he finds a gift bestowed on him. Then comes a period of settling down, a quiet time in which the teacher of love rests a while in reasonable peace. Now he consolidates his learning. Now he begins to see the transfer value of what he's learned. Its potential is literally staggering. And the teacher of love is now at the point in his progress at which he sees in it his whole way out. You give up what you do not want and keep what you do. How simple is the obvious and how easy to do. The teacher of love needs his period of respite. He's not yet come as far as he thinks. Yet when he's ready to go on, he goes with mighty companions beside him. Now he rests a while and gathers before him, going on. He will not go on from here alone. Next stage is a period of unsettling. Now must the teacher of love understand that he did not really know what was valuable and what was valueless. All that he really learned so far was that he did not want the valueless and that he did want the valuable. His own sorting out was meaningless in teaching him the difference. The idea of sacrifice, so central to the thought system, had made it impossible for him to judge. He thought he'd learned willingness, but now he sees he does not know what the willingness is for. And now he must attain a state that may take some time. He must learn to lay all judgment aside and ask only what he really wants in every circumstance. Not each step in this direction so heavily reinforced it would be hard indeed. Finally, there's a period of achievement. It is here that learning is consolidated. Now what was seen as shadows before become solid gains to be counted on in all emergencies, as well as tranquil times. Indeed, the tranquility is their result, the outcome of honest learning, consistency of thought, and full transfer. This is the stage of real peace. For here is heaven's state fully reflected. From here, the way to this community of love is open and easy. In fact, it is here. Who would go anywhere? If serenity is already complete, and who would seek to exchange tranquility for something more desirable? What could be more desirable than this? So thanks for calling in and giving us the first part of the lesson, Terry, with your with what you shared about the traveling around for a light bulb.
Yeah. Well,
that brings an energy to the world, but pretty deeply healing. So appreciation for your healing and your willingness and your commitment and your dedication, how long you've been rocking at it.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
All right. Joining you in bringing it into the world and seeing that arm heal and whole. Breathing with you. Any other thoughts for today, Terry?
Nothing's coming up right now. I'm just enjoying the moment.
Holding the space with you. So, Ms. Jeannie, you've got a hand up?
We actually have three hands up. The first one, I believe, is
all right.
903, you're on the air.
Well,
am I on the air now?
You're hello? Loud and clear.
Oh, okay. I thought I put my
gotcha.
Hand down, but I wanted to say, a couple of things, but, you know, just sending positive energy as I imagine everyone is doing for the gentleman that just spoke, Mr. Terry, there. Something that came to mind. I met an occupational therapist many years ago, and it was a very powerful conversation, essentially. What this therapist was telling me, we were having a conversation about, I don't know, nerve channels or something, and the sciatic nerve came about and how much havoc it could wreak on a person's life, and just the constant back and forth trips to, you know, whoever they go to, whatever medicine they're getting. And she expressed to me how simple it is, you know. And what she does with her clients, which is, you know, the area that causes many sciatic issues from her experience is simply there's a portion of the sciatic nerve that travels through a canal, and what typically happens is it pops out. And it's just a constant, you know, income for, you know, some people. But she says right. that what she does is she just simply massages it back into place. And she teaches her clients where that is and how to do it. And that is the best form of treatment because, I mean, as opposed to, you know, I don't know what it costs, you know, for, you know, treatment, but I imagine it's a lot, and it's a lot of pain that a person goes through. But it's a whole lot more cost effective. And it was like, for me, it was like, wow, you know, just a doing one's due diligence in their area and sincerely having another's best interest in mind goes a long way. And that was super powerful to me. And I really appreciated her for what she did. Pardon?
Sweet.
Yeah, for sure. The thought that came to mind with Mr. Terry there is, I think when, you know, having the mindset that he has, you know, and believing that it'll come to be, you know, it could happen, you know, for sure, you know, and as it was mentioned, you know, but also kind of be practical about it. There's steps in between as, you know, it sounds that he understands. And to me, I feel that, you know, what I wanted to share is maybe picking up a anatomy and physiology textbook if, you know, if that's your thing. Just a thought, you know, and understanding how those components work around the areas that you're having issues with. Not that, you know, you're going to perform any type of surgery yourself or anything, but I think just getting an idea and visualization coupled with, you know, the will for it to be can really magnify
yes.
The direction that you're going in. And if nothing else, as Dr. Rice mentioned, you know, it's like, hey, consult somebody that deals with that, and that could further enrich knowledge and give better direction as to what needs to be done next. So that's all I wanted to share.
Great. Good one. Good thought to get a visual picture of what the perfect looks like, too, to hold that is definitely very powerful.
Yes.
Cool.
And since I'm on here, a couple of days, I don't know, my days just run together. I want to say a week ago or so, but maybe it was just a few days. There was a young lady speaking about her grandson and just the troubles that he's having with, you know, just, I guess, extreme hostility is kind of what I took from it.
Right.
And he's college level. It just, you know, I worked at a college for, you know, about 5 years, and I wore uh-huh. many hats as a student developer, but, you know, it made me wonder, you know, what are we doing to target, you know, the younger generation, because it just really seems that, you know, I mean, I imagine I'm on one end of that, you know, as I'd say, but, you know, it just really does seem that there's a bigger disconnect coming, really kind of deriving from the millennials. There's like a diverge to me anyway, it seems, you know, like where extremes come about. And just after that, you know, it's just a totally different generation. So what I was thinking about, you know, it's like there's a lot of great information that's been said here and a lot of wisdom, you know, people that have come across it in a number of ways. And like, wow, even me, like how I stumbled across this you know, this radio, the website, you know, I haven't even gone as deep as it goes, you know, like I'm still like scratching the surface, but I feel extremely blessed and fortunate, you know. I don't know how many years I was listening to the same seminar back, I don't know, 70s or 80s, like is my go-to, you know. And so just to actually come across, you know, Dr. Rice here and, you know, like, wow, like most people like that I've reached out to with, I watch a lot of videos. Some of my favorite videos on YouTube seem to be, you know, wisdom that, you know, like seminars and workshops from like the 60s and 70s. And like, it's so powerful that it would seem that they were speaking today, cutting edge technology. And unfortunately, a lot of people that I've reached out to, you know, to see if they're still doing things or they still have, you know, their shops, you know, unfortunately have passed. So I think Dr. Rice is the first person I've reached out to that is still here. And I just feel exceedingly blessed by that. But the corresponding thought there is that, you know, I am, strangely enough, as some people would put it, attracted to such wisdom and knowledge. And it's a little bit different than maybe some other people in my generation. And then when I start thinking those that are coming after me, it's like, wow, I mean, there's a pretty big jump there for them to, like, stumble across this. I'm not saying it wouldn't happen, but the chances aren't as likely. So my thoughts are like, what are we doing? Because that's the coming, those are the coming leaders and whatnot and the energies, and there's so much influence in them. It's just a thought. I don't even know if I formulated that right, but it's just a thought. Like, what are we doing to, like, target them and expose them to some of this knowledge? Because I just think that when they lock on, it could be a pretty powerful thing. And
one thought that comes immediately is that since you're acquainted in that arena, perhaps part of your purpose is going to be to spread the information, take the tools, and make them available to people in that age range. You know, basically, up until 5 years ago when we stopped traveling and moved here to Bristol, Virginia to take care of Jeannie's dad, we literally went anywhere on the face of the globe we were invited. Our workshops were free. We paid our own expenses, and the idea was just to make it available. We're still in that mindset, although we're not physically traveling. I do have one workshop series in Sarasota that I'm going to be doing that I'm traveling to, mainly because a friend, the physician that's sponsoring it, just really wanted some of his clients to experience some of this work directly. Otherwise, our last workshop on the road was 2019. But I'm always available on Zoom too. So if there are any doors you can open or anybody, I'm always available for podcasts or live workshops via Zoom. You know, any way that we can take anything we have and make it available. You know, whether it's kindergarten, you know, a few weeks ago we did get to speak to a kindergarten class about forgiveness and functioning as love. So if you have any doors you can open anywhere to take it, that you can open it, know that we're still available to put it out there. Up to me, our commitment is to do whatever it takes to make this available to literally, and we mean literally, every mind, heart, and being on the planet. So any role you can play in helping us to do that, we'll be there.
Awesome, and I will certainly keep that in mind moving forward. And, you know, I totally off from what's been said here. It just came to mind. I wanted to express gratitude towards you, and I don't remember the caller's name, but she had asked you something that I had actually thought before, but it was like in the back recesses of my mind. I sort of suppressed it for some reason.
Right.
But I don't recall exactly how it came about, but in essence, she asked you how you continue to move forward in this journey, and your response was very powerful, and it was super encouraging. And that is, you know, just a little bit of leaven. It's like, wow, that is, that says it all. I mean, it doesn't say it all to some, but the way you put it, it's like all it takes is a few people, you know. And what's a few, you know? Like, I mean, when you look at the total mass, all the people on the planet, you know, it's a lot, you know, and a little bit is still going to be a lot, but it's a whole lot more powerful. I don't know. Either way, it was just that was extremely encouraging, and it really helped me to understand how you do keep going on. Because I've wondered, it's like, man, that's a lot of energy you're dispensing, you know. I mean, just being I understand that, you know, when you are a person that gives off energy and helps people out, I mean, you really need to recharge, take care of yourself. And, you know, from what I've seen, you're doing a lot. You've been doing a lot. And I'm like, man, like, how does he do it? But at you explaining that, I think, gave me a charge for years to come. So thank you.
That's awesome. And one of the things I'll offer is that what I'm really clear with is what I do doesn't come from me. So it does not deplete me. It comes through me. It's an energy that comes through me. And, you know, each person that takes these tools, you know, like Terry shared, an insight, a state of mind, when we realize that in the world of energy, all matter is totally transparent to what happens in the mind. There's nothing in the physical world. Like, you know, if I turn a light on in the room, the walls are dense enough that the light doesn't show up on the other side of the room. If I put a radio wave, start broadcasting a radio signal from here, gee, it passes through the walls, but, you know, 5 miles down the road, it's not available. And what we know now is that the high energy wave that leaves the mind when we think a thought, everything is transparent to it, including time and space. There is no inhibition in it. And so, to me, one of the hopes of this work, and I can remember years ago looking at the amount of drama and trauma and, frankly, the number of crazy, vicious, vile people there were in the world, and I was like, how could this ever be changed? There's so much to be done. And then I, you know, took on the perspective of this physics professor that lived 2,000 years ago, came from Bethlehem, and he said, a little leavening leavens the whole loaf. And each one that engages in a higher level of mind energy, my offering, my take is, literally makes that energy available to every person on the planet, each insight that comes. And the stronger the field of insight becomes, the easier it is for those who have no access to it to begin to become expressions of it. And for me, the verification of that, you may have heard me talk about this before, but this to me is just speaks volumes about what we do with our minds. And that is, if you do some research in the area of patents, there are several occasions where a patent was taken out in the United States Patent Office for something unique that had never been seen in the world before. And at the same time, that patent, the same day, was registered in two other countries by people who had never had any contact with the person registering it here. And that's happened several times. When what that says to me, that verifies the whole thesis that if I bring a new level of energy into my mind, if I bring it into the world, it literally energetically becomes available to anybody who's willing or anybody who's in tune with it. And like states of mind reinforce those states of mind in others. So the more people we can get to drop, to work through, to let loose of the hostility and fear game and literally bring the active presence of love into a circumstance, you know, a circumstance of a conflict with a child or with a spouse or whatever, to bring active present love in opens the space for that to be brought in more easily by every person on the planet. And so that's one of the motivating factors for what we're doing. So well, pass it on, please.
For sure. It reminds me of this book called Heart Math. But, you know, yeah, we're all connected, and I will certainly pass that on. Thank you for what you're doing and what you allow to come through you.
All right. Blessings. Take care. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, we're down to the last 10 seconds. The announcer just informed me, so I'm going to just say thank you for joining us. Please create the best year yet of your eternal life. It is an awesome gift to give the world. Take care. Bye-bye.